Welcome. You're listening to the podcast, The Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. We're Sandy and Ron Fraser.
Hello again.
Today we have our little dog Chester here that's might make his presence known. We've got a storm coming and he's a little nervous about the storm. So he's joining us in the studio. Okay. Well, yesterday we started talking about the life of Baha'u'llah, and we covered his life up until 1863 when he arrives at Adrianople, which is now called Edirne, on the border between Turkey and Bulgaria. It was while he was in Adrianople that he wrote to the kings and emperors of Europe and the Middle East, telling them that he was the messenger of God and telling them to arise and to support the new religion. All of them rejected him, except for Queen Victoria of England. And you'll notice, if you look at the history of the last 100 years or so, that all of those kingdoms have gone away, except for England is the only country that received one of these letters that still has a monarchy. All the others have been replaced by a republic or some other form of government.
That's more than a coincidence.
Yeah. He pretty much cleaned out the kings and emperors. He also wrote to the Pope. He wrote to Pope Pius IX. He told the Pope the same thing, that he was the new messenger from God, and that the Pope was directed to sell the riches of the Vatican and give the money to the poor. The Pope ignored the letter. And you'll notice that right after 1868, he also lost the Holy Roman Empire and was left with just the Vatican property.
Wow.
After 4 years, the governor of Adrianople comes to Baha'u'llah and says that there's a message from the Sultan that Baha'u'llah is to be sent to the prison city of Acre, and all the Baha'is are to be sent to Cyprus. And Baha'u'llah says, no. The Baha'is that want to go with me are going to go to Acre, and the Baha'is that don't want to go with me can go to Cyprus. And this governor is kind of taken back by this. He says the command of the Sultan cannot be altered. And Baha'u'llah says, the command to be obeyed is mine, not the Sultan's. The governor's got some pictures in his head of his head being cut off. Baha'u'llah tells him, go to the Sultan, tell him that it's Baha'u'llah's wish that the Baha'is that want to go with him to Acre be allowed to go to Acre. So the governor goes to the Sultan, delivers the message, comes back to Baha'u'llah and says that the Sultan said that Baha'u'llah was free to do as he wished. So Baha'u'llah and I seem to remember about 70 people went to Acre and the remainder went to Cyprus. They arrived in Acre in August of 1868. Acre is such a miserable place, or at least it was then. The currents in the Mediterranean were such that all of the junk floating around would end up in Acre. So you'd have the dead fish and rotting wood and whatever else was floating around on the surface of the sea would be piled up on the beach right outside the prison.
And Acre had a lot of nicknames, like the most great prison.
It was referred to as the most great prison, right? Mm. There was a saying that if a bird flew over the prison, that it would drop dead from the stench. The water was foul and polluted. There had been an aqueduct built during Roman times to bring water into the city, but the aqueduct had been broken for years and years and hadn't been repaired, so the people relied on these wells that were infiltrated with seawater. It was just horrible. So the Baha'is were put into what's called the citadel, which is sort of the maximum security part of the prison. The whole city's a prison, but it has a prison within the prison. They were given black bread, many days old, to eat and polluted water to drink. They all got sick. So just a miserable situation. No one was allowed to visit Baha'u'llah during this time.
Was there a window? That part of the story about the window where people would be outside, they'd gather outside just to see him wave his hand.
Right. There was a window in his prison cell, and you're right, that's the best the Baha'is could do. If they wanted to see Baha'u'llah, they would go and stand on this one mound of dirt that was outside the prison, and from there they could see him wave his hand. But that's all they could see, is just his hand waving through the bars.
And with that same view, Baha'u'llah saw very little of nature because of where he was placed.
Right.
And the nature is what fed his soul, I think, you know.
Right, right. He said that when he finally does leave Akka in a few years, we'll get to that today, he says that he hadn't gazed on any kind of greenery for years and years.
These stories are really precious to us because we later got a chance to see so many of these places when we went on pilgrimage to Haifa. And
yeah. Sandy and I went in 2002. We went to Haifa for a pilgrimage.
They've really come to life for us.
While they were still in the citadel, in June of 1870, Baha'u'llah's youngest son, we haven't talked about him yet, his name was Mirza Mehdi. They called him the purest branch. That's the easiest way to refer to him, the purest branch. The sons of Baha'u'llah were known as the branches. So the purest branch was on the roof of the building, he was walking back and forth saying his prayers, and he fell through a skylight. Beneath the sky, he fell about 20 feet. And when he landed, there was some packing crates that were sitting there open on the floor, and he fell onto the open packing crates and just had terrible injuries, broken ribs and internal bleeding and whatnot. They called a doctor, but the doctor said there was nothing that could be done for him. So Baha'u'llah went to his son after people had cleaned him up a little bit and asked him if he wanted to live. This is really hard.
It's a very difficult story to tell because it's so heartfelt.
The purest branch said that he wanted God to accept his sacrifice.
To accept his life as a sacrifice.
So that the Baha'is would be able to visit Baha'u'llah. So he died after about 24 hours, and it was 4 months later that Baha'u'llah and his family was moved out of the citadel and were allowed to live in a private home. And so the Baha'is were able to visit Baha'u'llah again. It was at this time that he revealed what we refer to as the most holy book, the Kitab-i-Aqdas. This is our book of laws. Now, some people, when they saw Baha'u'llah for the first time, were immediately able to recognize him as a messenger of God. Akka got a new mayor, and the mayor was sitting at a coffee shop, kind of a sidewalk cafe, having coffee or tea with a friend. Baha'u'llah is brought down the street by a couple of soldiers. He's being transferred from one place to another. He's obviously a prisoner of these two soldiers. When the mayor sees Baha'u'llah, he jumps to his feet and bows at the waist, and he stays in that position until Baha'u'llah passed out of his sight. And then he turns to his companion and says, "Was that the Lord of Hosts?"
Wow, he clearly was able to recognize him.
Right.
There were no veils there for him. That's beautiful.
So in 1877, so this is 9 years after they arrived at the prison, Abdu'l-Bahá rents a farm just outside the city, and he asks He tells Baha'u'llah that he's rented this farm and that he'd like Baha'u'llah to consider moving out to the farm. Baha'u'llah says no, he's a prisoner and he's required to stay in the prison. So Abdu'l-Bahá goes to the mayor and tells the mayor what's happened and asks the mayor to intervene with Baha'u'llah. So the mayor goes to Baha'u'llah and tells him that, you know, he can leave, and Baha'u'llah says, no, I'm a prisoner. And the mayor looks at him and says, who could keep you a prisoner? Then the mayor gets on his knees in front of Baha'u'llah, grabs a hold of the bottom of Baha'u'llah's coat, and says that he won't let go until Baha'u'llah promises to leave the city. So so that's how Baha'u'llah broke out of prison, with the mayor begging him to leave. So in 1877, he moves to this farm. And then 2 years later, there was a plague in the area. And this wealthy family decided that they were just going to leave the area altogether. And they left a larger house empty. And Abdu'l-Bahá was able to lease that house for £25 a year. So Baha'u'llah then moved into this larger house. And it was that house which he lived in until he died in 1892. The period from 1877 to 1892 was a fairly quiet time in Baha'u'llah's life. He spent the time writing and receiving visitors. I want to say a little bit about the revelation of the verses of God. People like to watch Baha'u'llah revealing these verses. It was considered a great bounty to be able to see this happen. But people didn't like to look directly into Baha'u'llah's face when he was revealing the verses of God. So what would happen, Baha'u'llah would be in a room pacing back and forth, and off to his side would be a small group. There was never very many people allowed at a time to watch this. So maybe there's three or four people over on the other side of the room watching him from the side as he reveals the verses, and there'd be a couple of secretaries, usually more than one, sometimes as many as three secretaries trying to write down the verses, and then...
And sometimes they had a hard time keeping up with him.
Yes. That's why there was three of them. And they would compare notes, and they would try to make a finished copy after Baha'u'llah was done, and then they would get him to approve it, and he would make some changes perhaps, and then they would make the final copy of the verses from that. So there was one man called Varga who wanted to see this. So he was in the audience one day watching Baha'u'llah pacing back and forth and revealing the verses. And Varga was a little bit mischievous, and he thought, and to himself, he's thinking, you know, I know he's the messenger of God, but wouldn't it be nice to have some little proof? And just as he had that thought in his head, Baha'u'llah quoted this verse in the Quran that says, you don't ask God for proof. And so Varga, he's thinking to himself, he says, boy, that was interesting, but maybe that was just a coincidence. And then Baha'u'llah stops and looks directly at Varga and says, what? That wasn't enough proof for you?
So, oh, my.
Another person that visited Baha'u'llah, this happened in 1890, this famous British Orientalist named E.G. Brown visited Baha'u'llah. I wanted to read what E.G. Brown said of his visit with Baha'u'llah. So this is a quote from E.G. Brown. He says, the face of him on whom I gazed, I can never forget, though I cannot describe it. Those piercing eyes seem to read one's very soul. Power and authority sat on that ample brow. No need to ask in whose presence I stood. As I bowed myself before one who is the object of a devotion and love which kings might envy and emperors sigh for in vain.
I'd like for you to talk about the children, how Baha'u'llah loved children and how the children loved him.
Yeah, before we close, there's one really cute story that happened in about the same time as E.G. Brown's visit. There was a little boy living in Baha'u'llah's house. This wasn't one of his children. It was a child of one of the Baha'i martyrs. This little boy had gotten into the kitchen and swiped some sugar. He had both of his little hands stuffed with sugar. And of course, Baha'u'llah knows everything, so he knew what the little boy was up to. So he calls the little boy to him, and the little boy comes up to Baha'u'llah it's easier to describe this if you can see me. I'm a little bit handicapped with just audio. The little boy comes up to Baha'u'llah with both of his hands behind his back, so Baha'u'llah can't see the sugar. Baha'u'llah has a bowl of wrapped candies. So he holds the bowl of wrapped candies out to the little boy. And the little boy doesn't quite know what to do because he's got his hands all full of sugar. So he reaches forward with his lips and he sticks his face down in the bowl and gets one of the candies between his lips. Then Baha'u'llah tells him to hold out his hands. So he holds out his hands. He's still got the sugar clenched. So
He holds out two fists.
And Baha'u'llah takes a piece of candy and puts a piece of candy on the back of each of his fists, and then tells him to run along and play. So then the little rascal has to figure out how he's going to get the candy and the sugar all at the same time without dropping any sugar. Okay, well, maybe that's enough for today. In May 1892, Baha'u'llah died, still a prisoner of the Turkish government. Having written over 100 books, he leaves a will putting Abdu'l-Bahá in charge, telling the Baha'is that Abdu'l-Bahá is their perfect exemplar. He's the perfect example of what a Baha'i should be. We'll surely do another podcast on the life of Abdu'l-Bahá and all the wonderful stories about him. So to mention again the books about Baha'u'llah's life, there's Baha'u'llah, the King of Glory by Balyuzi, God Passes By, written by Shoghi Effendi, Baha'u'llah's great-grandson, and Stories of Baha'u'llah, written by Furatan. These are all available from the Baha'i Distribution Service. I hope this podcast helps. His life was really extraordinary, and there's so much more to it than just these few stories. There's really hundreds of stories, some just little fragments, glimpses of his kindness to people and to his sense of humor and his patience, more than anything, his patience with us, I think.
I think that's true, that you see so many virtues that he displayed during that time. And even now I'm thinking of more stories as we're at the conclusion of our program, you
well,
know.
What
I'm thinking about the coat that he gave away, you know, the new coat that
That was Abdu'l-Bahá.
Oh, was that Abdu'l-Bahá? Well, see, we have to do a whole section on Abdu'l-Bahá, too.
You could do a whole podcast on stories of Abdu'l-Bahá giving away his coats.
And what about that that the Blessed Beauty, who talked about the four qualities that he loved to see in people.
Do you have that?
I do have it. And this is from the Stories of Baha'u'llah. It's compiled by Ali Akbar Furatan. It says that the Blessed Beauty often remarked, "There are four qualities which I love to see manifested in people. First, enthusiasm and courage. Second, a face wreathed in smiles and a radiant countenance. Third, that they see all things with their own eyes and not through the eyes of others. Fourth, the ability to carry a task once begun through to its end." So I could strive to try and do these things. Yeah, it would be wonderful.
Probably all of us could work on at least one of those four.
Absolutely.
Well, as Christ said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. It was the same with Baha'u'llah. To see Baha'u'llah was to see the power and the wisdom of God moving in a human form. The people that saw him were, at least many of them, were very careful to write down their impressions for our benefits, and that's where these stories come from. So I hope you're moved to study more about his life, and remember, you're welcome to join us at any time.
You've been listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. If you'd like to learn more about the Baha'i faith, call 1-800-22-UNITE, or in Florida, call 850-543-2129. Look on the internet at www.baha'i.org for the international site, or www.baha'i.us for the U.S. site. Remember that Baha'i is B-A-H-A-I. In Florida, our website is www.emeraldcoastbaha'is, that's with an S at the end, .org, emeraldcoastbaha'is.org. You can email me at panhandlebaha'is@aol.com. Thanks for listening.